Voice et al. Versus Christy Noem et al.
Mr. Trundle?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Jeff Trundle. I am a Deputy Attorney General for the state of South Dakota, and I represent the appellants in this matter. Before I get into the substance of my argument, there are four main points that I would like to stress to the court, and at the risk of running out of time, I will run through those quickly now. First of all, in Judge Kornman's analysis of House Bill 1094, he adopted an unnecessarily broad definition of mainly the phrase solicits petition signatures. In Judge Kornman's analysis or interpretation of that phrase, he found that it encompassed basically anyone in any context, in any location, that would speak in favor of signing a petition for a ballot measure. Two, because he found such a broad definition of solicits petition signatures, he then applied viewpoint, he found that House Bill 1094 constituted viewpoint discrimination. Mainly, his analysis said that because it only applied to proponents, and again, in his interpretation, any possible proponent, it did not apply to opponents, and so he found that it amounted to viewpoint discrimination. Because he found that it amounted to viewpoint discrimination, number three, he applied strict scrutiny when he analyzed Section 1 of the Act. And because it is instead a disclosure law, the proper standard should have been exacting scrutiny. And likewise, in my fourth point, in analyzing Section 3 of the Act, he did apply exacting scrutiny. But both under strict scrutiny and under exacting scrutiny, he found that the state had not presented any evidence of an important governmental interest.
Counsel,
under exacting scrutiny.
Counsel, would you address why the appeal isn't moot in light of the revisions that the legislature enacted? It seems to me that's a significant problem you've got to face here.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. After 1094 and after the trial was completed, the Senate passed Senate Bill 180 and made a number of revisions to House Bill 1094. I would argue that while it did limit the group of people that it applies to, specifically now it only applies to paid solicitors and paid circulators. It does not apply to volunteers, but the restrictions, a number of restrictions still apply to the paid volunteer, the paid solicitors and paid circulators.
Isn't that a big deal, though, to the viewpoint discrimination holding by the court, by the district court here? I mean, doesn't that arguably change that analysis fundamentally?
Well, I think that it's still, you know, the disclosure requirements are still in place for paid circulators. And so, and while a few of those have been changed, there's no longer a requirement to include the occupation. And I don't know that I'm going to get every point correct off the top of my head, but there's no requirement that it includes the occupation of the circulator. It does not include the requirement that the circulator's identification number is on the badge. I guess that would potentially be.
I understand those things are still all in the statute, but my question, I think, is the same as Judge Kobus's. Once you sort of gut the reasoning of the original opinion, because there's been substantial modification of the statute, aren't we just speculating on what the district judge would have said with the statute as it exists today? And isn't it just more appropriate for us to vacate the court's order and declare it moot to move on?
Well, I guess as we interpreted Senate Bill 180, we felt that it was more of a clarification to fix the fact that Judge Kornman's definitions were extremely broad, where this clarified, I believe, it clarified the intent of the original bill. While there are some changes in the disclosure requirements, there are still a number of disclosure requirements required. Those have to be provided to the Secretary of State's office ahead of time. It changes the directory is still available ahead of time, although It doesn't have the badge requirement like it did before. And again, I guess I would say that that would be the main difference, but the other restrictions are still there. And the other
What's the state's position, counsel, if assume for the sake of argument that we find the appeal moot? Are we required then, or should we vacate the district court's opinion, or is that an option we have, or what's the state's position on that? Assuming for the sake of argument that we find the appeal to be moot.
If this court finds the appeal to be moot, then yes, we believe the proper procedure at that point would be to vacate Judge Kornman's decision.
Why?
Well, otherwise it leaves a precedent at the district court that we haven't had an opportunity to get a ruling on appeal.
But arguably here, the case is mooted because the governor and the state modified the statute here. Does that matter? In other words, arguably the state is responsible for mooting the appeal. It's a different situation than, you know, having a chance to press your arguments here. You change the statute. Does that matter on whether we vacate?
I guess in this context, and like I said, I believe, yes, there are some changes. However, many of those are they limit the scope. They decrease the number of disclosures and they clarify the definitions. The vast majority of House Bill 1094, Senate Bill 180 is still consistent with House Bill 1094.
Well, wasn't 180 passed sort of in response to the district court's opinion?
I believe that I read in Mr. Leach's brief that he went back to the committee hearings and there was mention of different issues that came up during the litigation. So that could potentially be the case.
Haven't plaintiffs also indicated that they no longer feel disadvantaged under Senate Bill 180?
I guess I read his brief and I'd have to go back and read it again. I guess I felt like, yeah, he was not arguing that Senate Bill 180 was unconstitutional. I agree with that. I guess I didn't see where he specifically said that all the problems from 1094 were gone.
Maybe that's better directed at him.
And I apologize for not having that information. And my fourth point this morning is both under the strict scrutiny standard or the exacting scrutiny standard, is Judge Kornman found that there was no testimony or evidence whatsoever provided to show an important governmental interest. Because he found that, it was a clearly erroneous finding, and as such, it amounts to an abuse of discretion. The sponsor and co-author of House Bill 1094 testified at length at trial. We also provided documents from the state court action that found a ballot measure that had been found the petitions were unlawfully gathered, or the signatures were unlawfully gathered. And so that was a case that Representative Hansen, in his status as an attorney in private practice, was hired to investigate. And he found these problems, and that was litigated, and eventually the court threw out a number of petitions, and the ballot measure was kept off the ballot. Judge Kornman doesn't mention anything about Representative Hansen's testimony. He doesn't mention anything about the court case that we provided evidence of. The one statement that he makes in his opinion that might be referring to it, where he says there's never been a successful violation of our previous laws, and so that means there's no problem. However, this problem was only uncovered because somebody paid an attorney, paid a number of investigators to investigate it. They went through the litigation. They had to jump through all the hoops to find that these petitions were submitted and did not have validly collected signatures. Because of that, the petitions were thrown out, and it was after the deadline for gathering more petitions. Actually, under House Bill 1094 or the revisions, these problems would have been discovered ahead of time before the petitions were circulated, and as such, even the proponents would have had a benefit because they could have seen to it that these problems were not repeated before circulating the petitions and circulating the petitions. One other thing, and I see I'm just about out of my opening time. I've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, but one of the problems and the reason for the solicit petition signatures language is important was because what Representative Hansen found was that a number of people from out of state came to South Dakota and they would pair up with an in-state resident They would both be collecting signatures. They would both be soliciting signatures. But ultimately, the in-state resident would be the one that would sign off on the petition, and there was no way to identify the other person that had witnessed and collected those signatures. And so that's why the solicits petition signatures language was added to the definition, basically, of a petition circulator. I see I'm out of my opening time. If there are no more questions at this time, I will come back in my rebuttal.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Tronville.
Thank you.
Court will hear from Mr. Leach.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. This case is about three issues. Number one, jurisdiction. Number two, mootness. Number three, the merits. Turning to jurisdiction, we would like to get this case decided. As we see it, the only way that can occur, consistent with Rule 54B, is if this court remands to the district court to give the district court an opportunity to enter a Rule 54B order, and then the case can come back here and this court can have jurisdiction to do what it chooses to do.
Why is that? Because we don't have a final judgment? Is that what your position is?
Yes, you have a document that says judgment, but under Rule 54B, of course, it's not the name on the piece of paper that controls, it's the substance. And
but don't we still have jurisdiction over the appeal of an injunction under 1292A1?
Your Honor, I'm glad if you find jurisdiction. I'd be perfectly happy to have you do that. I'm not going to argue.
You're arguing we shouldn't.
No, I was just trying to say that I think that's what the law is, but I'm perfectly happy if you find jurisdiction.
Okay.
So with respect to mootness.
Let me ask you, do you agree or disagree that we would still have jurisdiction with respect to the injunction parts of the case under 1292A1?
I agree. So, Your Honor, then turning to mootness, the court is exactly correct. The 2020 legislature, in response specifically to Judge Kornman's decision, replaced HB 1094 with SB 180. And the state concedes, quote, the components of HB 1094 that the district court specifically discussed in its opening opinion, in its opinion, were amended by SB 180, close quote. That's in its response to our motion to dismiss at page 3. So 180 is the law of South Dakota. 1094 is a historical, it's just history at this point. And nothing about 1094 is before this court properly because it's not the law anymore.
Mr. Leach, would you address the issue of if we agree with you and find the case to be moot, do we vacate the district court's opinion or not?
Yes, Your Honor. The answer is no, you do not. And the reason is set forth in your case, this Eighth Circuit's case, Moore versus Thurston, just from last year, in which the court states it applies two tests. And this is at page 11 to 15 of my reply brief in support of my motion to dismiss as moot. The first test is, was the party seeking vacator responsible for the case being moot? In other words, is it their fault? And there's absolutely no doubt that the parties who seek vacator, the state, were responsible and are responsible for this case becoming moot, because they passed this new law, knowing specifically of Judge Kornman's ruling, and specifically attempt to pass a new law that would satisfy what Judge Kornman found. And the second, I see you start to speak, Your Honor. I'm sorry. The second reason is also in Moore versus Thurston, which is whether the public interest favors keeping the lower court decision on the books. And what the court said in that case is judicial precedents are valuable. They're valuable for the entire legal community, lawyers as well as courts. And in this case, we don't have just this one issue that comes out of nowhere in South Dakota. At page 13 of my reply brief in support of my motion to dismiss, I cite the link to the New York Times article from 2015, which says this is an issue around the country. You have citizens of all political persuasions who brought ballot initiatives, and the powers that be in the particular states, whatever their views are, don't like it and want to reclaim their power, and so they create laws that limit the right of initiative. And the question is, are those laws limiting it, constitutional or not? And so Judge Kornman's decision in this case has application around the country, certainly in many states of the country, all those states that allow initiatives. And the only reason that, I mean, state complaints...
It's for opinion, it's not binding on anybody.
Well, it's not binding, Your Honor, but I think we could all agree that courts often give deference to what other courts have found. And I think certainly that Judge Kornman's decision is well-written and persuasive enough that other courts would like to have that to look at on other similar challenges. And the state complained in its opening argument that it wouldn't have a chance to have a decision on the merits from this court. Well, there are lots of district court decisions that don't wind up with court of appeals decisions that other judges still look to. Plus, the only reason the state isn't getting a decision on the merits is the state chose to enact a new law instead of sticking with HB 1094.
Mr. Leach, is there any part of SB 180, any provision of that that was in substance part of the challenge to 1094?
Well, yes. And I think the clearest way to think of it is that the state took 1094 and they took the parts that Judge Kornman held unconstitutional, and some of them they eliminated. For example, the solicitor's petition signature requirement, they eliminated. Others they kept, but they changed them. So they no longer apply to unpaid circulators. The 180, and to get to perhaps what is a more direct answer to your question, Judge Grunder, 180 does not have the, quote, solicit petition signatures, close quote, language. That is totally and absolutely gone forever. What 180 does have is this public database, but for paid circulators only, not for unpaid circulators. So the short answer is yes, it did keep some of it in a different form.
So are your clients potentially disadvantaged by 180 as well, or are you happy with 180?
My clients are potentially disadvantaged by 180. And I've never said I'm happy with 180. I'm happy that they got rid of the solicitor's petition signatures, which is so blatantly unconstitutional. But I can't see how we're going to be able to resolve today the constitutionality of 180 when that has not been been challenged, tried, or decided at this point. And it seems to me, to a large extent, what the state is asking the court to do is to speculate on the arguments that could be made for or against 180 and then resolve those arguments as a court of first impression, which I suspect this court is reluctant to do. So, the attorney for the state made reference to the court not discussing or not accepting the testimony of Representative Hansen, the sponsor of HB 1094. The district court, of course, is not bound to accept the testimony of any witness. And in this particular case, the district court had really great reason not to accept the testimony of Representative Hansen. Because at trial, Representative Hansen comes up with a story, well, we're just trying to prevent fraud and get cleaner elections and all this really nice language that everyone can agree that we shouldn't have fraud and we should have clean elections. However, he also admitted that before this lawsuit was ever filed, he's out in public saying the purpose of HB 1094 is to keep out-of-state liberal ideas out of South Dakota. And in light of his admission of that, there's very good reason for the court not to take his testimony at gospel, in fact, not even to accept it. And the district court was precisely correct in stating that when Representative Hansen, after he testified, the record was clear that the only time, despite there being having been dozens of initiatives in recent years, the one time there was a problem, the existing system was more than adequate to clean it up. When we talk about the existing system, that specifically included and still includes SDCL 2-1-10, which requires that a circulator, after circulating, submit an affidavit containing the circulator's name and address to the Secretary of State under penalty of perjury. So if there's a question about a circulator, the Secretary of State has that information. And that's certainly yet another reason why, on the merits, the district court was correct in finding 1094 unconstitutional.
Counsel, what about the argument that circulators were working in pairs with an out-of-state circulator, and that the state or private parties would have a hard time tracking down who that second circulator was, and in some cases they were verifying signatures on the petition? How do you respond to that argument?
Well, Your Honor, I respond to it by saying that HB 1094 does not address that problem at all. HB 1094's language, which is, of course, what the law was that the circulates, that the solicits petition signatures requirement, and I quote, includes people who solicit petition signatures from members of the public for the purpose of placing ballot measures on any statewide election ballot. That's their definition. And so if the intent was, as Representative Hansen claimed, the people who wrote the text did a terrible job of putting that into language, because the language they created was so incredibly overbroad. And of course, when there's a disagreement between what the sponsor of the measure testifies was the legislative intent and the language itself, then we must determine the intent from the language itself. We can't rely on just what one person says the intent of that language was.
Mr. Leach,
yes, sir.
Going back to the mootness question, if we were to agree with what you and I talked about a minute ago, that we have jurisdiction over the injunction issues under 1292A1, and if we then agree with you that the state's appeal is moot, where does that leave us with respect to your cross appeal?
As I see it, it leaves you with remanding the case to the district court to rule on that issue, that claim.
Would we remand, or would we dismiss for lack of jurisdiction because we don't have a final order on that last claim, that fifth claim?
Either one, Your Honor. Either one. We're happy with either one.
I know you're happy. I'm wondering which one's right under the law.
I think that's ultimately your call, Your Honor. I don't have a specific opinion on that simply because it's not important. So, Justice Kobus, in further response to your question about Representative Hansen's testimony and what he claims it was intended to do, if you look at, I believe it's Joint Appendix page 8, it's the definition that the legislature enacted in 180. When it got rid of the old, incredibly overbroad solicits petition signatures language, it created some new language, which is a lot closer to what Representative Hansen testified he wanted. But that's, of course, a case that's not before the court now. All we have before the court is the 1094 appeal. So I think it's clear that this court understands the issues, and if you find jurisdiction, great. If you find mootness, I think it's absolutely not only correct, but compelled on this record, because there is no case or controversy with respect to HB 1094. And then, however the case gets back to the district court for the purpose of having the district court rule on the fifth cause of action, that either way is fine with us, and we're glad to let you make that decision. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Leach. Mr. Tronbold, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I would like to respond to Mr. Leach's statement that the solicit's petition signatures language is gone completely in Senate Bill 180. This is page 4 of the appellant's brief, and the definition of circulates includes someone who solicits from another person personally and in the presence of such other person a signature on a ballot measure petition while acting in concert with another person who simultaneously physically presents or otherwise makes available the ballot measure petition. This is precisely the definition that was the intent of House Bill 1094. It's clarified in Senate Bill 180. Mr. Leach referred to the fact that the judge had no requirement to accept the testimony of Representative Hansen. What Judge Cornman said was the state did not provide any evidence whatsoever regarding a legitimate or an important government interest. And he also said that Representative Hansen came up with that at trial. If you read his entire testimony, he said that he doesn't deny making the statement to the press, that sound clip, that soundbite that Mr. Leach refers to. He doesn't specifically remember it. What he did say was that in discussing this bill with a reporter or anyone, he relayed his experience in the prior election cycle investigating Initiative Measure 26. He also testified that at the committee hearing on House Bill 1094, as well as on the floor of the House, he relayed that experience in investigating the ballot petition signatures in that prior election cycle. So this was not a recently fabricated version, as Mr. Leach infers, and Representative Hansen testified about that at trial.
Mr. Tronbold, I think it's your position that the fifth cause of action was decided by the district court. Is that right?
It is, Your Honor.
On what basis could we conclude that? I didn't see any analysis or any mention in the judgment, anything that led me to believe, other than denying the motion for reconsideration and purporting to enter what is a final judgment.
Correct.
I don't see anything that deals specifically with that fifth cause of action.
And there wasn't, Your Honor. And last week I supplemented our brief with additional case law regarding how to presume when a court does not, issues an order but does not specifically rule on it. And there is, now this was in the context of habeas cases where a federal court is reviewing a state court decision. And in those cases, it says, and I cited those in the letter that I sent to the court last week, and Mr. Leach responded to that, where the federal courts can presume that the state courts ruled on the merits when it does not specifically talk about it in their opinion and does not specifically analyze.
That's a much different context, habeas. Okay. Involving state courts. For purposes of argument, let's say we were to conclude that the challenge to the injunction was moot and that the fifth cause of action hasn't been decided. Where do you think that leaves us?
I believe that under the rule, since Judge Cornman did not specifically rule on some issues, issued an order on some but not all, that then, yes, he needed to specifically analyze those in his opinion.
And would we dismiss for lack of jurisdiction because we wouldn't have a final order there? Or what? Or do we just remand?
And again, I guess I don't know the proper procedure at that point.
Okay, thank you.
And finally, Your Honor, I have like 30 seconds left. I would just like to repeat that House Bill 1094 does not address, Mr. Leach said that House Bill 1094 did not address the problem, and it specifically would identify the problem prior to circulating the petitions instead of waiting until after they're already submitted, after the deadline for submitting those petitions, when nothing can be done but to remove the measure from the ballot. I want to thank you for our opportunity to argue this morning. We would ask that you find Judge Kornman's, reverse Judge Kornman's decision on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tronvold and Mr. Leach. We appreciate your appearance today. Case will be submitted and decided in due course.